Okay. Today is June 25th, 2015. My name is Kelsey Bobble, research assistant and master's student at IUPUI. Today I have the privilege to be interviewing Ms. Kate Boss in a conference in Sense Charter School on Barth Avenue. This is the second interview for Ms. Voss. The first was July 10th, 2014, and both are part of a larger oral history project titled Voices from Indianapolis Waterways. The purpose of this project is to better understand the changing roles of waterways, such as the White River, Pleasant Run, Fall Creek, Pogues Run, and Eagle Creek in Indianapolis. Excerpts from some of these interviews may also be used as part of a public art installation by Mary Miss, a New York-based artist. Principal investigators for this project are Philip Scarpino, Director of Public History at IUPUI, and Jason Kelly, Director of IUPUI Arts and Humanities Institute. Funding comes from the IUPUI Chancellor's Office, the Arts and Humanities Institute, and the Public History Program. We are interviewing Ms. Voss because she's a longtime resident of a neighborhood near Pleasant Run and because she is the Community Outreach Coordinator for Sense Charter School. Sense stands for Southeast Neighborhood School of Excellence and enrolls students in K through 7th grade. A charter school is a public school that is a non-sectarian and non-religious and operates under a contract or charter. Sense was established in 2004 and is located at 1601 Barth Avenue near the Barth Bridge that passes over Pleasant Run. Its mission, as stated on their website, is to nurture academic excellence, social development, and civic responsibility in every individual. More information on Pleasant Run can be found on Ms. Voss's first interview. Ms. Voss, I would like your permission to do the following. Record this interview. Deposit the interview in the IUPUI Special Collections and Archives and Arts and Humanities Institute for the use of their patrons, including possibly posting of this interview or parts of this interview to their websites, and use part of the recording in a public art project being carried out by Mary Miss concerning Indianapolis waterways. Do we have your permission to do these things?
Absolutely, you have my permission.
Okay, so let's go ahead and start this interview with just kind of a short review of what we talked about last summer. What's your role as the Community Outreach Coordinator here at Sense Charter School?
My role as the Outreach Coordinator is to get resources in for the families, funding, programming, and then I get resources out to the families, and I connect the school with the community.
And what have you learned about the relationship between Pleasant Run and the surrounding community as your position in the school?
It's been a long process that I've been connected with reconnecting our waterways. I am on some of the planning committees about the Barth Street site. I have been involved in the planning, and then I get information out into the community about the developments at the Barth Street Bridge area.
Okay, so this oral history project is about the Indianapolis waterways, and we're interviewing you because you live in the neighborhood near Pleasant Run. So last summer, the neighborhood was a recipient of a grant from the Kresge Foundation, details of which can be found in last summer's interview. What were the plans on how to use that grant?
The plans to use that grant, there are a couple different sites that we're going to be recipients. One is the Prospect Falls and the other one is the Barth Street area. We received the money at the our area. We are replacing the bridge that exists there now with a footbridge. There is going to be art installations there. We are also going to be able to build an outside classroom and people don't like the term, but an amphitheater using large limestone boulders and with a platform that will enable us to do outreach into the area and the community for performances, for outreach, for art classes, and for our science classes.
Okay, so last summer, no construction had started yet. And what was there for the Barth Street Bridge was a bridge you could once drive on and was no longer drivable. So can you kind of tell me what's taking place now?
And so now we are in the process of taking the bridge down through the funding that has allowed us to keep some of the bridge. We are going to build bridges, benches with some of the bridge materials, and then we are going to put a arched pedestrian bridge there, and that is under construction as we speak.
So what kind of things have you run into between the planning and the actual execution of the plan?
Some of the things that we have come across is to make sure we get the funding, and that has been secured, and then also get information out into the community about the developments. We were excited when we got the funding, and we rejoiced. And then when I started getting the information of the developments about what was going to happen with the bridge into the immediate community, the families pushed back and said, we don't like that at all. We don't see why we need to replace the bridge. It looks perfectly fine. Why are they using money that could be better spent other places? I feel that they wanted to have more of a voice about what was going to happen there. And so I started going out into the neighborhood, knocking on doors, canvassing, getting them to meetings, and getting information out to them.
Let's talk a little bit more specifically. You talked that you go to a regular informal meeting at the local gas station. Can you tell me kind of what you've learned from those meetings?
Absolutely. This is when I first started getting an inkling that there was pushback on the community. People gather at the gas station informally, drink coffee, converse, and when I said about some of the plans that were going to happen at the bridge, it was unanimous that nobody in the neighborhood that was attending these informal meetings thought that that was a good idea at all. So I went back and said to Roe that this was a concern in the neighborhood, and so they brought their planning person, their outreach coordinator, and then people from the neighborhood were invited to come down to see what some of the plans were. There are massive plantings that have happened in the neighborhood, and so that was a large concern about what was going to happen to the plantings. So once they knew some of the plans and some people came from the neighborhood to see what was going on, they had better reassurance. And so then I made it more of a mission of mine to go out into the neighborhood and get that information out. There's still pushback, but I think it's symbolic of all the changes that are happening in Fountain Square. They feel maybe they don't have a voice to what's happening. And here in their very midst, something that's been long a history, they then are wondering, why is there more change that they don't have a voice about?
Another thing that was added on the far side of Barth Bridge from the school was a bike sculpture. Can you talk a little bit about how that got set up?
So this was a very exciting development that the Da Vinci Pursuit had independent funding, and they were going to build a structure, a kinetic sculpture on the path that runs alongside the Pleasant Run stream that is very close to the Bar Street area. So they went out into the community. Quincy Owens is part of that, and he employed some of the kids to help to create some of the pieces for the kabikoscope as part of sparking interest and an ownership about the sculpture. So we had Kresge people here. We did a quick presentation, and then within a week it was dismantled. So I don't know where we're going from there. I have not been in conversation with Mark Kiesling, but he has reached out to me and our science teacher in building curriculum that will be associated with the kabikoscope. There are other plans to put more of them along the path, but I think that for right now it's dismantled, and I don't know where we go from there, but it's a wonderful partnership, and I think it is going to be a good asset. We just need to be conscious that there are issues in the neighborhood of destruction, of anger, of things that they don't understand. Why is it in their midst? And to be conscious of that and build things like the bench that they are proposing that will withstand any kind of vandalism. But in general, I think that having the kabikoscope is going to be a positive. It's just how do we then fold that into our curriculum, because the kabikoscope is a mashup of art and science, and I think that that can spark a lot of magic in the community.
So Barth Bridge is being turned into a footbridge, and then once that's completed, there's been talk of the bench that you just mentioned. Can you talk a little bit more about the process of choosing a bench and the reclaiming of materials and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. So there was a competition, and there were proposals submitted. I think there were five or six different proposals. Part of what was going to happen is that they were going to use part of the bridge, a repurposing of it. So late yesterday, I got the proposal sent to me, and then we were supposed to vote on which one we thought was worked for us. And so I was concerned that the community yet again was not going to have a voice about the choice on that. So I sent that out, and in fact, I got some response from community members about some of their concerns about the bench. And yet again, when we were on a walk together, when we were looking at the site, I saw one of the community members, and she said, yet again, is the community able to choose what's going on in their very neighborhood? And so there was a concern about that.
So with all of these groups coming in trying to help, how would you suggest to them to engage the community more?
I believe that we are trying to do our best. There was a large community meeting that was held by the Department of Works at a local church. I got information out by going canvassing in the entire neighborhood to urge them to attend. If they had pushback on this, this was an opportunity for them. I believe postcards were also sent out to members in the community. So, but I think what's important is that there is somebody who goes and has a conversation with this, that there is that connection, that they feel that if they have a voice, that it is going to mean something, that is not just something that they're being told that this is going to their neighborhood, but they have an involvement, they have an ownership about what does this look like for their neighborhood.
Let's jump back just a little bit one more time, back to Barth Bridge.
Absolutely.
And talk a little bit about, you mentioned the plantings in the area.
Yes.
And that the community was really concerned of what would happen to some of these plantings. Can you kind of retell the story for me of what happened with those flowers and the worker who's working on Barth Bridge?
Absolutely. So there is a woman in our neighborhood who has long maintained a stretch along Pleasant Run, and it is in conjunction with the support of the gas station, again, where we meet informally. When I realized that the construction was going to start, I went to her and I said that it was going to happen and these plants are going to be disturbed right by the bridge due to the demolition. Concerned, she found somebody with a dozer, and she had them dig a large hole and took away all the good soil that she had deposited there and took it away to a safe location. And so there's this huge crater, which I found to be very symbolic of how the neighborhood felt about what was happening with the area. So then when I knew that they were actually going to start demolition, I went to her and said that it was going to start on the following day, and that if she and I could tag team, we could maybe go down and tell them to leave the plants alone and maybe even move them to a safer location. So I went down and I talked to the guy who had the dozer, and I said, "Miss Shirley will probably be down to talk to you. I just wanted to let you know that she has a lot of concerns. These are her plants. Please be respectful." And he says, "Yes, ma'am." And so then, sure enough, she went down, and I, by sheer will, which she has, she had him pick up all the flowers, the plants that were in the location where they were going to be disturbed, and pick them up and put them in a location that was aside from where that was going to happen. And he did it with such finesse and grace, and we don't think that we lost a single plant. So then she and I went through, mostly her, and then we took the and distributed the daylilies and flowers that were in the area. So I went back down, I thanked him, but she regularly goes down, visits the sites, and keeps up on what's going on with the developments of the bridge. And then she is also seen as a some trusted person in the neighborhood that she can then disseminate some of the things that are happening in the area.
One of the things Ms. Shirley did say is that she actually trusted this guy now.
Absolutely.
So can you kind of explain what that means for the project and what it kind of means for the community to kind of put out there that they are willing to trust someone within a project they weren't sure about?
Absolutely. I think that that is what's important, is to build those relationships. And my making her aware that this is the demolition was going to be happening, that I had already built a relationship with her. We could work together to find solutions, and she feels part of that process. When we had the meeting down there with the planning person and representatives from Roe, they were able to give her plans that she was able to go back, and then if she had any kind of questions about it, then she could address that to them, so she feels part of that process, and she can also be a person, a spokesperson, to tell others in the neighborhood that this is going on, that they can be part of this. And so when I got that email for the benches, she was on my list that I sent out, and I said, get it out into your community. Let them know that this is going on, and let them vote for what they want. And she sent back concerns, and then I sent that on to Roe, and they would take that into consideration when they are planning that bench.
So since we talked last summer, one of the things you said that's really happened in the last year was a change in the demographics of the neighborhood and the housing changes and the gentrification. Can you kind of explain what's going on that way?
Absolutely. So there has been a huge influx of people who are in millennial group. They are buying houses in our neighborhood. They're getting houses fixed up. The housing prices.
Christy Taylor, please dial extension 100. Christy Taylor, please dial extension 100. Thank you.
We're in a school, so.
Sorry about that. So housing prices are increasing quickly. People are moving into the neighborhood at a rapid pace, but in that exciting development that is happening in the neighborhood, for our families, which is 97% below poverty, that is meaning that housing prices, rent, are all going up, and they are being displaced. And so we are starting to lose some of our families due to this trend. Part of this alarm to me is that we are losing some of the history, that these are families that have been here generationally. And so we are going to lose these oral history. So I'm looking to apply for a grant that we just applied for and submitted today. And that is to try to get equipment that we can build a after school program, or possibly an elective where the kids can go out after they learn interviewing skills and media literacy to interview our families, so we can capture those stories, so that we can archive those, so they will not be lost to time. Part of the grant that we have come up with is perhaps to put QR codes along the cultural trail. It is the cultural trail that has really brought an awareness to Fountain Square, that people are now excited to be here, where for a long time the area fell into disrepair. It was not a place that was desirable, and now with the new influx, a lot of exciting things, economic development, wonderful restaurants, but our families do not feel part of that. So I just wanted to be able to capture that oral history. Perhaps then we could use the QR codes along the cultural trail to have those stories that somebody could use with a smartphone and then listen to some of the stories and the history. We're getting a radio station from Big Car installed into the neighborhood. Could this be a way that the kids could get their stories out? Could we do a video? We might partner with Heartland. This could be a game changer for some of our kids to then maybe find this as a career path, as a passion. But I'd like these stories to stay in the neighborhood. I'd like our families to stay in the neighborhood. I'd like to find that balance of diversity that's so important, that we can all learn from each other and live together in coexistence, but we are at a tipping point. We will see in the next couple of years how that progresses.
So you're talking about the cultural trail and a tipping point of changing demographics. And when we were out viewing Barth Bridge and walking the cultural trail, you mentioned that as the cultural trail came in is when things really started to change. And with these more environmental changes of a new bridge where Barth Bridge is and the possible amphitheater and the outdoor classroom, do you think these changes that are directly around the waterway are what's changing the community as well?
Absolutely. We are already seeing on the other side, on the south side of the stream, we are seeing that people are buying up the houses, that they are seeing it as a desirable location, that economic development is bringing in changes to the housing and to people's desire to live here. So that is the positive about gentrification. And yet, I know that some of my families have had to leave because they've lived along the stream, and now where there's a desirable location, they are being forced out because they cannot afford the rent. So it's a balance point. It's all from your point of view. What is happening here is positive for many of us. A lot of us are excited about the things that are connected with Roe, but then when you go into the community, they don't like it at all. They are pushing back on this. They don't see why there has to be this change, but it's symbolic, I believe, of all the changes that are happening in the neighborhood and they don't feel part of.
One of the things you mentioned when I first got here of this changing to gentrification was the developers coming in. Can you kind of talk about how the bad side of those developers, of what's going on, of them calling in and trying to get people to move?
Absolutely. So I've had a few instances where our families come to me because they say that they suddenly are being forced out, because I suspect they're going to go from rentals into being rehabs and then being sold at a large amount, more than our families can ever afford. And so then I have to call up the developer and say, or the rental agency, and say, they have a contract, you cannot force them out. But our families don't feel that they have rights. They don't feel that they have the means to fight this. So I call up, I make some terse conversations, and the families are allowed to stay. Something else that is happening in the neighborhood that some of us have become aware of is that some of the elderly have their houses. They've been here for generations. Somebody is now calling on some of their houses, health and hospital, code enforcement, and saying that there's violations when oftentimes there are not. But the person across the street, he's in his 80s, he's had his house for 1 week called six times. And then developers are calling some of the elderly and saying, hey, I hear you have some situations, that you have some problems with the house. I will buy that from you. Just name your price. And so these families feel that they need to maybe unload their houses that are defective or they're getting worn down by health and hospital. And so some of us are starting to look into this and trying to give the elderly an idea that we can fight back on this. But sometimes they just feel like they don't have any control over this, that it just is with all the different changes that they might as well move too. And I don't want to see that happen. It'll be yet another piece of the oral history that we are going to lose in our community.
What would you consider to be the biggest change in how the school uses its outdoor space since last summer?
So we have been partnering with CEESE, Center for Environmental and Earth Science, through IUPUI. This year, we had a science club that was very exciting. It was for grades 4 through 8. We consistently had 12 kids that showed up every week, and the focus this time was to create an outside environmental conservation area. So they did research on what would attract birds and bees and things that lived in our community and plant native plants. So they transform a large strip of land that was on our property, and it is growing well. They learned a lot, and hopefully that will be a wonderful addition for time to come. We were recently approached by somebody to do a rain barrel workshop here. I think that would be exciting, just to get information to our families about the use of rain barrels. So we will use that as an educational piece as well. And we always have the garden club. We have the garden club that is important because the kids generally are fed from food pantries. They think everything comes out of a can or a package. So they are able to plant the raised beds. This year it was for grades 1 through 3. It's a little helter-skelter. It was run by one of our parents, but they were so excited. We had 18 slots and I got 60 applications. That's the excitement behind these kids wanting to garden, to put a seed in, to watch it flourish. And so what we put into the food, we then are able to harvest and put into our food pantry. It's fresh, it's organic, and it's a great lesson for our kids.
We'll go ahead and pause real quick.
Sorry. Oh, it's good to see you. Kelsey, this is my husband.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. You just going to meet Alan for lunch. Didn't know if you could go.
Looks
like you're busy.
Yeah, I'm sorry, baby.
Sorry.
How you doing?
Okay.
Is it a better day?
It is.
I'm so glad to see you. I love you, baby.
Fun, don't say
I'll do Pilates, and then I'll be home. And okay. Oh, and then we got to go to
I'll just see you Commerce.
Yeah, sounds good. Anything?
Andrew sent an email, 3:30, should come over to the guy there in Prospect.
Are we going?
I told her I would meet her over there.
Okay.
So, even if you're
just
available.
Beware, be prepared, and I'll bring plastic gloves.
Okay, well, we'll see. I mean, I can do anything you want to be involved in.
Thank you. Are we?
We're recording right now, yes.
Yeah, turn it off for just 1 minute.
Okay.
Are you able to?